This week on RSVMB Update, it's time for the Node on Front. Improvements for Magic are on the horizon with RuneScape's first Tier 95 weapon, the Staff of Armadil. We run through all the hype, take note on a lore Q&A, and share our expectations. This is RSVMB Update, episode 839, recorded Thursday, July 22nd, 2021. Take note on this. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. Tanis, you're back this week. You're back off your pontoon boat from the deep south.
That's right, Shane.
I got the
pontoon
boat bit right.
You did say I think he was on a beach, and I was. We had went down the Gulf Shores and had some fun down there. Went on a few different boat rides actually, but went out in the Gulf. Don't call it an ocean; that really pisses people off around there. And we went on an airboat, which not exactly a pontoon. This is more like, you know, what they used on Swamp People. Got the big old fan powered by a big old Chevy or GM motor on the back. Yeah.
You're first getting into character for that.
Yeah, well, our guide, you know, the old Cajun guy is like, y'all ever watch Swamp People? We're like, yeah. He's like, hey, nothing like that. We're, oh, okay. Well, I guess it ain't nothing like
and,
that.
And I bet you let some of your accent slip through too, because you did. Contrary to what listeners might think, you did spend a good time and good deal of time in the South.
Oh yeah, yeah. There's degrees. There's levels to this shit, Shane. I was in North Carolina. This was
second degree son.
Way down.
But a little bit more. That other voice you hear is Questcaping. Welcome aboard. We do have a lore Q&A, and you're very excited about what the impending release of Front 1 this coming Monday means in the grander scheme of things. You were very much looking forward to being on this one and bringing forward some speculation on this.
Oh, yeah. Lots to pick apart.
Yeah, you know, it's been 4 weeks since City of Sintistan, believe it or not. And we're pushing in, and a few days after that, we're going to have the release of the Node on Front 1, which, of course, as many people expected, is going to be the Jazz Front. And we have a whole discussion planned on that, including the lore Q&A and some patch notes and even a few questions. So if you want to follow along, you can find show notes at update.rsbnb.com. And of course, we also have the RSBNB Discord at rsbnb.com/Discord. And I think the PVMers are perhaps the most happy out of everyone I've seen this week. Would you guys say that's a fair assessment?
Yeah, pretty much.
I would think so. Now we'll see if that holds true. I'm still a little leery that it's maybe not going to be difficult enough for them.
No, it's not going to be difficult enough.
Yeah,
we all
it's going to be
that.
Like way difficult for us, because the last two bosses, I think
Matriarchs.
You know, right,
and Raksha.
And even Raksha were catered more towards middle, you know, lower
well,
to middle PVM.
Matriarchs are beginner. I'd say Raksha is a step or two above Araxer even.
Mm-hmm.
So,
really?
Yeah.
See, I thought they were kind of...
No.
Not okay.
The same.
Okay.
No. But
okay.
Raksha is definitely above where they pitched it, yeah.
Yeah, and the people were surprised about that, and they're being very coy about what the actual... limitations of that boss is going to be, and how hard it's going to be to actually kill
not
him.
Not falling into that pitfall again.
No, but let's just have a look at this announcement trailer that came out last Friday. If you're listening on audio, enjoy what you hear. You can find it, of course, linked in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com.
The fate of Gilinor rests on this very battlefield. But this is no war. This is a massacre. With each skip of the needle, my triumph draws closer. Your futile fortifications will falter, and the cathedral shall fall. Forged through suffering, my army knows no mercy. Jazz commands me to reclaim the eggs, and so your forces must perish. The pathetic false prophets you have deified will lead you asunder, and all shall fall in my wake. It is time.
And of course, who you heard voicing that trailer was Karapak, of all beings. Launching July 26th, the Nodon Front.
But the worst was still yet to come.
There's always a more worst.
Yeah, that's very true. It could be the worst yet to come. So what the trailer is effectively showing is it's showing Sentist into all the various different phases. Before the quest, then when we move the eggs in. Then with the eggs there and the attack beginning on the cathedral, then, of course, it also shows the generals of the gods that were there siphoning the eggs. And I guess what we can pull from this is that these generals will, of course, be appearing. The people who we fought in God Wars 1 and God Wars 2 are going to be, of course, involved in this, which I mean, makes sense because we already worked with Zilliana during Battle of the Monolith. What was the biggest thing you guys picked up out of the trailer?
Well, it's a bit of a minor thing, but I did love the phrasing of the false prophets you have deified.
Yeah.
It's just a little reminder that Karapak is older than this universe, older than any of our gods.
Because he's from the last revision, right?
Yeah.
The Dragonkin are as a whole.
Mm-hmm. And just completely above all of what's come to pass in this one.
Do we know how they survived?
They hid out in the abyss and just sort of jumped between worlds to find a new one. And they found Gilanor.
Another fun thing that I picked up on this, and I was trying to rack my head of what this meant, and I talked to you about it. With each skip of the needle, of course, we have the quest, the needle skips. And you pointed back to, of course, the analogy that was used in the needle skips as in a stuck record player that keeps playing a certain part of the track over and over, which, as we've learned in the combat reveal, that there's going to be an element of using the needle and stopping time in the fight with Karapak.
It's time travel time. Yeah, they kind of hammered in the Karapak saying, "It is time."
Yeah.
That's what you got to do whenever there's time travel involved. You can't have time travel without a few good time one-liners.
Yeah, and you know, I was always under the impression going back that they wanted to avoid time travel in quests.
Well, if it's a minor, like, it's the difference between time travel and time loops, I guess.
I guess.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess if we all wanted to, we could prepare by watching our favorite Star Trek time loop episodes.
Woo!
I should put together a list of those.
Time Squared.
And Time Squared is good. There's also one in Enterprise E Squared. There's Cause and Effect.
Oh, yes.
There's one of the early episodes of Voyager that I'm blanking on the name on right now, but there's lots of time loop episodes like that that you can kind of pull on, and we'll have to wait and see what happens with the Nodon front. But this trailer released last Friday put out purely to build hype. We didn't really learn too much about it, what was happening until this week. There was also another video they did this week about a dev diary, so to speak. Is there anything you want to talk about with the trailer before we move on to actual pieces of reveal here?
Yeah, it's worth noting that the reaction to the initial trailer was kind of, okay, this doesn't actually show anything. I want the stuff.
Yeah.
And it was a really good trailer. That was my thought.
It was, and that's the point. And I mean, you're going to get these people who are going to split every little hair on that. We want to see the boss fight. We want to see what the drops are. Yeah. But that's not the point of this kind of trailer.
Yeah, it's just – it's going to be – it's eye-catching. It's incredible. It's the voice acting, the effects.
Oh, yeah.
It was really quite beautiful, yeah.
Yeah. And another fun thing about that trailer is that for the longest time, people in RS were accustomed to getting weekly behind-the-scenes videos on Fridays. And then that later shifted to monthly behind-the-scenes videos at the start of the month. But what has happened is there has been a transition to revealing and talking about content in the same way that every other major game does it out there. And I think that's what the disconnect is that everybody who plays RS expects RS to work one way. But when they try and do it this way and link it directly to how they would do it in another game, people just don't like it. And personally, I'm a fan of doing it this way. How do you feel, Dennis?
I think this is a good mix of building just enough hype without making it too big.
Yeah.
If you give RuneScape players too much time for speculation, bad things can happen.
And they lose control of the expectations with that too, which we know how big a problem that is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think this is a pretty good formula that they have going on.
Well, let's move into the actual content reveal here of what was shown with this. And the Dev Diary video, I just have a few comments actually about the Dev Diary video before we talk about actual content, because we're on the video vein right now. And one of the things that I caught with this, and I talked to you, Questscaping, about, is that everything that was shown in this video about in regards to the Dev Diary is not how you play RuneScape. Because, you know, RuneScape is, of course, the top-down point and click, but all the camera work in here, if somebody would have seen this, somebody who plays a different game is going to have absolutely no idea what kind of boss fight they're walking into. Because what you're shown here could very well have come out of World of Warcraft, let's be honest. And that's a level of quality that we're at nowadays. And that's a good thing. But anybody who is new to RS is going to be shocked when they get it and start experiencing this, because the trailer is going to look nothing like the actual gameplay in terms of the mechanics. Of course, yes, it's all an engine, but the mechanics won't.
Yeah.
I'm really glad you brought that up, because
like, I don't have a problem with that. It's good marketing, but go ahead.
Well, but the one thing that stood out to me more than anything else was, I was like, if we ever could throw away the whole point and click thing, look at, and I just couldn't get over. I'm like, this could operate like every other game I play, only it would be so much richer because it has all of the other stuff. It has all those skills. It has all these. It just made me want something that I know we'll never have.
Something to aspire to, eh?
Yeah.
I guess.
Also, looking at the video, a couple of other little key points here. This was first time since before COVID began that we've actually seen inside the Jagex studio. They used the live stream set for parts of the video, talking with Jack and Ramen. I believe that's who that was in there, which was nice to see, because you know you sit and look at these guys on their Zoom screens for the better part of a year, and you forget that they have this beautiful set in there. And I've been wondering when are we gonna be able to get back to those kind of live streams.
Be nice to see them all in the same room together again.
Yeah, it would. So I'm hoping for that. But that's the first thing. But another thing you pointed out about this trailer is that about the 50-second mark, there appears to be a visual cutscene showing the destruction of what was Anachronia.
Yeah, so it's interesting to have that in there.
Yeah.
You've suddenly got these scenes of just destroying, just absolute laser beams out of the eyes, destroying the Orthon city on Anachronia.
Did we know it was Jazz that did it before?
I think so. I think there was a Desperate Measures cutscene that depicted it through murals. All
right. Right. Oh, God, that was a long time ago now.
Yeah.
I remember that now. I remember trying to figure out what that meant, but it's very clear now, of course.
Here we go. Laser beams.
And,
yeah, so...
And, of course, for anybody who is unaware, the whole point with this is that the Dragonkin were bound to the Stone of Jazz, and now we're seeing that Carapax actions and what happened in the Needle Skips, how he is now bound to the Needle as a result of Jazz and everything that happened. We're seeing the effects of that. But
big old shiny dog story.
All in all, I was very pleased with the video quality work that they did on both of these. Grade A work by the marketing team as well, I think, in terms of building up the hype on this. Of course, you're going to have those people who complain and nitpick about every little thing. But I think this is how you market RuneScape. I know you and I used to talk a lot about this, Tanis, how, you know, before everything would just come out and it really wouldn't have a cohesive story behind it. But now everything does have that cohesive story, which is pretty good.
Yeah, no, I think all of that is correct. And I think some usage of these kinds of camera shots is okay, but I would be leery of doing the whole thing because it reminds me of, like, you know, way back in the day when you would see artwork on, you know, Atari cartridge or something, and it would be the most awesome thing ever with tanks blowing thing, and you put it in and it's, you know, stick figures. And you gotta be leery of that, I think, a little bit, because it is such a different experience. The way that you play from the way it was presented.
Question for you, Questcaping. What's the symbol on the thing on the floor at 233 in that
233
in the dev diary video?
Let me see.
I didn't catch that on the first watch, but that symbol is displayed prominently by the player, and I'm wondering if that means anything. I can't place where that's from.
233, give me a sec.
Yeah.
In the meantime, I do want to say that as far as the use of game footage goes, I brought up the point of the difference between using that for Azanadra's quest and using it for this very gameplay heavy thing. It's the difference between using it to promote a story. It's like, this is what the story is going to be like, this is the atmosphere, the mood of it, whereas trying to actually depict, preview the gameplay, which is where it kind of begins to feel a little more dishonest.
Yeah, and
that's a good point.
Yeah, and you know, I also think one of the reasons it was so successful for, wait, you said Azanacha's quest, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Wait, I was thinking, City of Sintiston.
Okay, I was thinking you meant City of Sintiston, but I just had to check there. Well, I think one of the reasons it was so successful for City of Sintiston is because this is the first time that we managed to catch a glimpse of it back then. So that's why that was a big deal.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Any thoughts
what was
on
that
symbol? 233.
233.
It's right when the fight is taking place.
Dragonkin bones. There have been people speculating on that, like, Dragonkin bones is a new way to train prayer or something. It's just something dropped into the video. I mean, they do look like the hardened and reinforced dragon bones that you get from Adamantum Rune Dragons. So,
and then they just
have
that
to be something for a 92 Slayer mob, right?
Fair enough. Yeah.
Well, on that,
that's consistent.
Let's jump into that since you mentioned 92 Slayer, and there's going to be Slayer creatures inside the dungeon, but of course everybody is, of course, talking about Carapax itself. And with this, the new Slayer creatures are made up of guards, which are melee-based, hunters, which are ranged-based, and artificers, which are magic-based, alongside the even more deadly engineering variant, and giving their powerful and savvy nature only an experienced Slayer of level 92 plus can hope to defeat them. They're also going to be having their siege weapons, and this is the 90 construction bit where you can destroy these siege mechanisms, and people who have 90 plus construction are going to be able to use them to turn their own weapons against them.
Mm-hmm.
And with this, you will have Commander Sylyana, Nex, Kriara, and Kirill all taking place in this fight, which we saw in the trailer.
Missing Grotto. Yeah. Salibandos.
Yeah. I mean, it completely skipped my mind that he was missing, and it kind of says about the whole position of Bandos now is what is pretty much a minor god, unless you talk to the goblin types. But it is what it is. But let's talk about this. We have upgraded new dwarf multi-cannons, improved kinetic cyclones, and improved all-deck coils. Three new kits that can be used to update these. Oh, yeah.
The upgrade cannon.
Yeah.
It's so cute.
And I tweeted this, and I said, you know, this is going to be the most underappreciated bit of the Nodon front is this update to the cannons.
Yeah, because cannons are already nice, but being able to use cannons at places where they're going to be even more effective, it's like a damage upgrade, I imagine.
Yeah, and I mean, I personally don't know people who use them. Apparently, they can be used to some effect at Rippers with the right
type.
If you're good. I know David talked about AFKing Rippers, which, I mean, don't even ask how he does that. I remember cannonballing Dagonoths back in the day. So,
the classic.
So this is going to be a big, big deal. And I imagine people who aren't interested in PVM, this is what you're going to be after. Because the other things that you get from this fight, from the Karapak fight, they say it's going to be a step above the previous God Wars 2 generals, but the first thing that you're going to have a chance at getting is the upgraded greater concentrated blast ability, which improves the concentrated blast ability. I'm sorry, everybody. I should explain why things are falling off the track here. I'm honestly not feeling well this week. We're holding it together as best as we can, but I'm, as you can tell, 100% not with it here, but we're going to get through this in the end.
We can do it.
70.
You're doing fine, Shane.
That's right. Hey. 70 to 290% total ability damage over 1.8 seconds in three hits, up from 48 to 246 over 2.4 seconds, so that's a whole tick faster. And for every hit that's channeled, you gain a 5% critical chance strike on your next ability. And we're going to, you know, save most of the discussion on whether or not these are good until we get their hands on them. But with this, David says that, you know, the way they're pushing this kind of damage up, they are effectively bringing magic up to where it was with 4-tick auto-attacking.
Uh-huh.
For people who don't want a 4-tick auto-attack, of course.
Back when Mage was king.
Yeah, and, you know, the general sentiment based on these numbers is that if you have greater concentrated blasts, you'll be able to meet ranged in certain instances, but if you don't have greater concentrated blasts, Mage is still going to be a little bit behind the rest of everything else. But what everybody is, of course, most interested in is the Staff of Armadil, which is RuneScape's first tier 95 weapon, which is going to be about a 2 to 3% DPS increase on tier 92.
Ain't it gorgeous?
It really is. It really is. And there's been lots of questions about what exactly this means, because you remember the Staff of Armadil is, of course, what Sliske used to kill Guthix. So, and go ahead.
Isn't it like, it's don't you ascend if you have that, or yeah, an artifact? Or,
yeah, but you are
going to be like godlike.
You
now
are immune to that power because of the World Guardian effect.
Thanks, Guthix.
Yes, sir.
And typically, yeah. Most ascensions from the Lord Kionei are done through killing of another god. Mm-hmm. But I honestly think that this is going to be the actual Elder artifact version, or is it going to be some other kind of
I think yes, but also there's my idea, because it's in split into three parts is how it gets dropped. I think that was something to do with the concept art that was being shown, or the model itself. It gets split into three parts, dropped in three parts. And I think maybe you can only ever put it back together imperfectly, because we've had other cases of Elder artifacts being shattered, like the blade, you find bits of it sparking in Guthix's cave, the Stone of Jess, we've got a few bits of it, and they do handy skilling things, but they're definitely not blowing up the wilderness to your power. So you get the staff in three bits, you duct tape it back together, and you've got a tier 95. It's not bad, but it's not what it used to be.
Yeah, and another thing I'm hoping with this is that there will be a skilling requirement for it. You know, let's just not drop the pieces. Let's actually use our skills in some way to put this together.
Well, I think have to skill for it. I think that's right on, though, because archaeology, you then would restore it.
Oh. Good point, yeah. Like a tetra compass.
But Karapak has the staff right now, so presumably it'll just be damaged when we kill him in hard mode. And that's a key point. You can only get this in hard mode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's making me think that hard mode is just going to be the hardest thing in the game right now.
It's like a three-phase... three-phase fight. Hard mode has an additional phase on it.
I wonder if it's going to be closer to, like, if it's like a Nyx kind of fight.
Oh, it could be. And, you know,
solo Nyx tier difficulty, eh?
Well, I mean, they said that the general without hard mode will be just a tiny, tiny bit more difficult than the God Wars 2 generals.
Yeah, I'd say Solo Nyx is harder than soloing any of the GW2s.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Another interesting bit about this is that this staff has been teased not only in the blog that we got today, but in the dev diary video, and also, of course, it showed up at the end of the announcement trailer last Friday when Karapak was wielding it. So the question that everybody has to keep in mind with this is, you know, what's the lore going to be about this? Is Karapak really dead at the end, or is he? Yeah. Or is it just some needle shenanigans going on? But we can.
That's a question I have for sure.
And you know, I think we'll have a chance to address that in our questions segment later today. But we also have the special attack instability, which launches an unstable blast at your target for 50 to 200% weapon damage, and each time you land a critical hit against your opponent for the next 30 seconds, your staff will fire an extra spell. Boy, well, where have we heard this before?
Oh, boy. Here we go again.
Let's just put 4-tick auto-attacking in-game here.
The Elder artifacts. That was their power.
Hey, but this time it costs GP, so you know.
Oh, and what's more, you can put it in a Essence of Finality.
Mm-hmm. That was my first thought.
I just find this amusing because there's going to be, of course, lots of discussion about whether this is going to elevate magic to where it's going to be, but we're going to save the pontificating on that until later. There's also
the naming of that instability. That's making me think
the staff is unstable.
Yeah,
because of how you put it back together. Mm-hmm. That's got to be how they're justifying it.
Yeah, I imagine so.
There's also Karapak's wrist wraps, which are tier 85 magic gloves that improve the combustibility. And when you wear these for 6 seconds after using the Dragon Breath ability, the combustibility will deal 25% more damage and deal it instantly. I can see this being used. And I realize there's always going to be a group of people out there who min-max, But for those who aren't min-maxing combat, and I put myself in that category, every little bit that we can get helps. And this is what I tell people in Star Trek Online when I talk about DPS there, is that, you know, you can do, you know, top 10% of DPS in the community, and that's wonderful. But if you're somebody else who's just getting going, every little bit that buffs everything, even magic-related, helps. And that also goes back to our Thaxi discussion about Emerald Bolts a couple weeks ago.
You've got something nice for that slot now.
Yeah. We also have a new god book coming, the Scripture of Jazz, and this will give you +5 prayer, +8 to all styles, and a special ability Time Rift for 10 seconds. All damage from abilities is added up, and then 20% of damage is fired off against your current target. So the more damage you do, the more you'll be able to burst out. I like the way this sounds, and especially that it's coming from a book.
Yeah, it feels like the old god book effects, but it feels modern PVM, doesn't it? And it feels pretty intense.
Yeah.
It's like, this would be very satisfying.
And each front will have a book, and they also say, note, Elder God books cannot be eliminated.
Oh. Yet.
Yet. That'll come probably in some other future update. Hey, maybe that's what... what the Telos-like creature at the end, after all of the generals have been released, will do, if they do something like that. They haven't promised that. I need to be 100% clear on that.
Yeah.
And then, while these are the main rewards available within the Noden front, there are a few more secrets to be discovered. And let's say it may be worth packing your Pontifex Shadow Ring. And there we have it. That's the reason why City of Centistan is important.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was a huge discussion last week, and ever since we learned about the front, that, oh, there's going to be no quest requirements for this. Well, Pontifex Shadow Ring will have a role to play in terms of making rewards more lucrative in the Elder God Wars dungeon. And we also know that the Shard of Erebus from Battle of the Monolith will presumably make everything non-aggressive to you. So I wonder, mm-hmm. does this scratch the itch that people were complaining about, that there's no quest requirements, that you need this to get
that? Some people will probably never be satisfied on that. It's a matter of every... Because this is one of the things where people are worried about how other people will experience it. They go... People are experiencing things out of order. Oh, but I want to experience things in order, so I do. And yeah, no one's stopping you. But for the sake of just even the people who aren't interested at all in experiencing things in order, well, you've got something to appeal to the efficiency mindset. You've got the most effective way to do this and go about it will be through these quest rewards. So there you go, you have a bit of a nudge.
Okay. Tanis, how do you feel? I don't think you were part of that discussion about whether quest requirements were needed.
Yeah, no, I wasn't here for that. It's kind of a bummer just because I'm going to do some quests if I'm do this.
Oh, yeah, right. But, you haven't done it yet.
Yeah, no. But, I mean, I think that's okay. I mean, to me, that's kind of traditional RuneScape, right? And since quest rewards always suck, now you get a boss that you might get a good reward from. So, what's more RuneScape than that?
This is your reward, the possibility of a better reward.
Yeah.
And you need to do a quest in order to gain access to it. So, and, you know, I think that sums it up nicely. And, you know, there is always going to be that question of prestige associated with whether or not you need hard quest requirements. But the way things seem to be going is that, A, everybody should be able to experience this content regardless of what quests they've done. And, you know, if you have done Battle of the Monolith and City of Centistan, you'll find it more lucrative and have an easier time. So
one more thing.
Go ahead.
I did see something on the RuneScape official Discord. They were saying that there is actually going to be an active nudge when you're trying to enter the dungeon for the first time. Let me see. Yeah, Rowley was saying, on entry, there is both a push to players who have not completed the quest yet to do so in order to gain context, as well as the pull aspect of the quest rewards being very useful to the content down there. So the push is apparently a bit of a message saying, hey, you haven't done the quest yet. You should think about doing so before you enter. So I think that sort of assuages the worry that people might stumble in accidentally and miss out on content, contextualizing content they would have wanted to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. We also have a free death week coming up with this. So it's going to be a good time for us to PVM. And, you know, we are doing another roundtable next weekend on that. So last time I took down the big spider. And who knows, maybe this time it'll be Carapac.
So. Have fun.
Next up, following from that, actually, is there any other questions that you want to go through here, lore-wise, about, or no, we're going to move on to lore right now, but any other questions about the front and what we've had so far?
I think we're good.
Alrighty. So there was also a new fangled thing they tried. Discord has these things called Discord stages, and what it is a way of effectively setting up a podium so people can register to their interest to speak. And they did this for a Q&A. You were there. I listened after the fact. And I think it turned out quite well, right?
Yeah. I really quite enjoyed it.
I like the authentic nature of it, of the JMods taking the questions directly rather than being pre-screened or having a host that is moving on between topics, because this was just more of a natural kind of discussion, kind of like we do here.
Yeah.
So
it's just the lore mods themselves being able to address directly.
Yeah, that was good. So
I was thinking.
Go ahead.
It feels like the RuneFest lore Q&As.
Yes. Yes.
It has that very authentic feel, the same sort of feel as being on the side stage, because I've been to a few RuneFests. They always have the main stage, which is all the big announcements, and then they've got the intimate little side stage where you got a few JMods around just chatting about the more niche topics and answering questions directly. And this is what that felt like, being able to be not on the same level, but relatively.
Yeah, and I think you could
closer than a stream.
And I think you could do this for any topic that you wanted to. So,
So I'm excited to see more of it. And I feel like for a hypothetical digital RuneFest, this would be an amazing way to go.
Mods Jack, Raven, and Rolly were there, and you know, there's even some pre-stage chatter where I just got a kick out of this. Somebody asked, you know, when did we start working on this, and Jack said, you know, some devs I've heard of, you know, work 2 years in advance, but he said, since my children were born, all time and space just merges into one indistinguishable mass. I measure things based on what I watch with my daughter. And Maud Raven says, you're really selling being a parent.
You know, I know what he's talking about. It's just, when I was in school, I measured everything by what year I was in, or grade for you Americans, and after that, it's just sort of been, oh, okay, things happen at some time.
Things happen.
Yep.
But, okay, so there was a longer gap between Desperate Times and Azanaja's Quest as they wanted there to be. And the main priority with doing Azanaja's Quest was actually to reestablish their position in the storyline and make the Elder Gods the threat they were, because before that, they were very abstract. We had the Heart of Stone Elder Gods that were not a threat, and it was a different kind of question being asked back then. And Heart of Stone was much more low-level than was intended to be a stage setting up the knowledge of the Elder Gods for a wider range of the audience. And from that, you wind up with Desperate Times, Desperate Measures, Azanaja's Quest, and then City of Zantistan, where we're at now. And they said that the problem, should it ever happened, was that before Desperate Times, the threat was non-immediate, and the goal of the entire storyline going forward was to bring that threat into the present and make it imminent. So They were pleased that they got to answer the question about who actually destroys the world. Is it the elder gods waking up? Is it the younger gods absorbing all the life to hatch? Or is it the younger elder gods themselves? And from the cutscene in Azenadra's quest, we know that it is indeed when the elder gods hatch. Now, I'm going to move on to the questions. You asked a pretty interesting question in there. I didn't get to hear you ask it, but you did ask it. And you said, were the Nodon designated as fighters as well, or were there combatants from every other creed, or is it just a matter of other Dragon King creeds not being particularly restrictive on what people do and don't do? And the answer to that was that it's a mixture. And the original thought was that the society would be built up around different ideologies. But of course, with any ideology and group, there are different people within that group. So I think that's a fairly anticipated answer, because just like any society, right?
Yeah, it's interesting to hear about the structure of the society because, well, introducing the Nodon and Augra last year like they did, there's immediately going to be questions about, whoa, okay, who are they? What's their deal? And what's the deal with...
Because we only knew about the Dactyl previously, right?
Yeah. So why are they split like this in the first place?
Yeah.
It's interesting. Rolly was saying things about the different philosophies they're based on, the Nodon very much being the pragmatists, and maybe a bit more militaristic as a result of that, but the people who are there to get things done, basically. And he was saying
scientists, of course.
Yes. He was saying another one was a more optimistic approach. And I think, honestly, that would have been the Surtees, because you've got the Desperate Measures cutscene where they're going, ooh, we're going to go talk to the Elder Gods, and surely they'll be fine with us sticking around, right? That's a very optimistic approach, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
So, yeah, it's interesting to hear about a society based around four different philosophies on how to go about life and society and everything about it.
Yeah, and they said, you know, the siege tools and the weapons probably all come from the Nodon. There could also be an army of Augra out there, but that would be a pretty scary sight. But they also said there's no lore of what the Dragonkin were like prior to this revision, which I kind of got the sense that what was being answered here is that this is kind of out of the scope of modern RuneScape.
Yeah, there's if we're going past this universe into a whole universe before it, that's an entire universe's worth of lore, and maybe that's a bit much.
Yeah, very true. Maud Iroh, the wonderful art director who's in charge of the character remodeling project, who everybody just loves when he appears on live streams, designed the style of 2D cutscenes for the storyline. And Jack said he really likes having meetings with him just because of how he works and what kind of perspective he brings to this. And, you know, there's going to be a question of, you know, maybe for the next storyline, does the art style change?
Mm-hmm.
I found that an interesting little tidbit that we wouldn't have had before when there was no art designer or senior art.
Yeah. As an artist myself, it's like I really enjoy the style in which they do the cutscenes. There's a really sort of dynamism to them. They're really sort of fluid in the movement.
Yeah.
Like it's expressive art, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, and it's a good way of telling the story too, because you effectively get, you know, a few flashcards popping up with some lore on them, and then that does everything that you need to do if you just want to get the very basics of the storyline, which I think despite what everybody complained about with Battle of the Monolith, I think it did that part very well.
Yeah, the images of Azenadra ascending to godhood, those were incredible and quite iconic now, I'd probably say.
Yeah. The next question, the gods are now siphoning their eggs. They're bringing their armies in, but it's not their entire army. And the gods don't seem as enthusiastic as they could be. And how come? Raven says there's a practicality that the entire planet of the people can't just come down to Sentistan. But in reality, City of Sintistan was in development while the Nodon front was in development. They were being developed in parallel, and this is something new that they were doing with lore focus being put into each and every update. It was hard to ramp up for Front 1 and establish just how big of a deal everything was going to be. Which is an answer, again, that I don't think we would have had previously, Tanis, because there was no lore in each and every update. Lore, they actually said, was added after the fact.
Yeah, and you'd be lucky if it was added just with a little a book or an examination. You might get, you know, a little Easter egg or
mod. And they tailored it based on what the players said. And they said, you know, Sliski's endgame took place in the heart, but it wasn't tied into God Wars Dungeon 2, even though it could have been.
Mm-hmm.
So now people were wondering why didn't there bigger characters, and they said to bring the gods to bring those characters in, they would need to use their power. But in reality, the question is, how big are the characters in the storyline, and are they good?
How big are the characters?
True, physically. That one did come up later in regards to the anima creatures like Virago and Telos. But it also factors into how good the models look, and perhaps that's why we don't have Gyarados.
Oh.
Oh
dear. No, missed out on his subject.
Missed out on
it. There was a God Wars 1 bosses update planned, but the models were really unpopular.
Yeah, and that was one of the things Osborne wanted to do, God Wars 1 remastered. But he asked the players, would you rather have God Wars 1 remastered or Elder God Wars? And this is the point where things start to really become questionable. If you put that to a poll, I honestly think that God Wars 1 remastered would have won. But
think?
I think so.
You're high. No way.
I think players would have chose God Wars 1 remastered. I don't agree with that decision, but I think they would have.
Shane, your conservative bias is showing.
I don't see how that even plays a role here.
People talk about...
Because it would be conservative to be like, no, let's just fix up what we got. It'd be great.
But people remember...
Like, give us new stuff!
People remember when God Wars 1 came out, and that's an iconic time in RuneScape's history.
But this ain't old school.
And perhaps that's a reason why old school RuneScape versus RuneScape 3 has a different player base numbers.
That's a legit point, but I mean,
which we're not going to discuss right now because we could be here for hours doing that.
Right.
Anyways, next question. Were the Nodon faction the only faction enslaved to Jazz? Play the content and find out. Ooh. All the Dragonkin were enslaved initially. There could be other slaves of Jazz that we don't know about, but in the sense the Nodon are the least enslaved because they slept off the curse and are no longer cursed. And this makes you wonder even why they're doing what they're doing, Jack said. And it's called the Nodon Front instead of the Dragonkin Front for a reason, which obviously they weren't able to say what that was, but I imagine we'll learn something about that in the content.
So you can just sleep this shit off like it's a bad hangover?
Well, they basically woke up like after Karapak and got Stoner Jazz Kablooey. It's like, oh, he dealt with it. Great. It's nice to wake up and have all your problems solved.
Yeah, and there's some resentment there on the other faction's part for the Nodon doing that. But
mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a rather... I'm not sure whether that's the phrasing, but it really sort of intrigues me what's going on there, because clearly it was what happened in Desperate Measures. The Nodon got enslaved because of Karapak, but there's potentially other stuff going on there. I want to see what's up with that.
Right. And this was actually an interesting thing that came up, and I'm jumping around a bit now in the chronology of what happened on the stream, but there was initially a different ending for Desperate Measures. An alternate ending that will not be spoiled. And that led to the question, how far back in development was it decided that Karapak would be an Elder God General? And they decided this last summer. It was before Desperate Measures was finished. And they knew that one of the stages was going to be designing who the general should be. And as soon as they heard Jazz was involved and had to be Carapac, with that, they also had an alternate ending that wasn't used. But the ending, of course, that we have was changed to allow Carapac to become that general. And it's partly why there was no boss fight in Desperate Measures. And without having a boss fight, the quest felt light on gameplay. So that's where the Dinosaur Tower defense game came in from.
Mm-hmm. For what it's worth, I have actually, hanging around the Lord Discord, have actually heard Modjack talking about an alternative ending for Desperate Measures, but quite possibly not the alternative ending.
Right.
It's where you... If they were bringing in Vicendathas at that point. They were considering how to do that. And
oh,
it was something
right.
about using him as bait to...
But then instead they put him in Effigy Incubator.
Yeah, his time came somewhere yeah. else instead.
Okay. I thought that was interesting. Now, continuing on, the Staff of Armadale's drop won't be a lore drop and a required item as it comes from hard mode. If anything were to be required drop for Master Quest and whatnot, it would come from story mode.
Yeah, so you don't canonically have the Staff of Armadale or anything.
Yes, and I think that's a very key point going back to our initial discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the original plan was that the quest listed at Runefest for City of Centistan was just going to be a dungeon quest that was constructed out of archaeology assets. And that quest wound up, of course, being rebuilt with a new environment. The quest pitched was attempting to deliver a lot with minimal assets, but the quest turned out to be really wonderful because it wound up having really expansive assets and environments. Could you imagine that if instead of what we got for City of Centistan, it was just a bottle quest using archaeology assets?
Oof, yeah. Just the exploration of it would have been entirely different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing it would have been City of Centistan, except it would have been using the Caradet assets.
Yeah. It's like, well, I've already seen this all before
yeah.
down in Alcarid.
Yeah. The original design of Stormguard was initially to be built as a city that crashed and wasn't one that was in the sky. I found that funny. But I'm glad they did it the way they did, because it's just so iconic having the city up in the sky.
Being able to fly around it.
Yeah. Now, here's what everybody is wondering. Are there going to be any long-term effects on the player since we now own multiple Elder artifacts? Maybe, they say. And jokingly, I need to underscore jokingly, they said maybe the bank tellers would ascend because they're holding the measure, everyone. But probably not, because the measure can't cause ascension.
Oh, dear.
Because, of course, everybody has the measure in their bank.
It's just the Dark Elder artifact. You pointed at things. It's the tricorder.
I think you made a joke about that at one point, Janice, didn't you?
I can't remember.
All right. The reason we don't have Brassica Prime or Marimbo in here. The answer was that these two gods changed the tone or not what you'd put in a guardian or protector type of role. And they were very blunt with that. And they said, yeah, Marimbo is drunk and Brassica Prime is a cabbage. Aye, aye, aye.
Brassica Prime has enough anima already. He doesn't need to siphon some from the eggs.
That's right. And Maud Raymond is still very excited about the needle and the upcoming boss fights. And one of the options in Desperate Measures that they were toying with was going to be the ability to destroy the needle.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, that reminds me. I swear I've seen some of the art somewhere where the needle appears to be held together, like it's got cracks in it, but glowing yellow cracks.
Oh, maybe that's what happened there. Maybe that was some early concept art on that. Then somebody asked the simplest question everybody was wondering about. Will Zaros return? The answer to that, play the content. And I was very pleased with the answer to this one, that we can't talk about future content.
Wait for him to come back yourself, eh?
I can't tell you guys how long I've been waiting for this to be the go-to of any JMod who's talking. Because, you know, for the longest time, it seemed that it was up to the individual project owners of the J-Mods. Then it was up to the individual teams about if they talked about it. But now the blanket rule is we don't talk about upcoming content until it's announced.
Good.
I think this is something they've needed to do for a while.
Well, yeah. This should lead to less unfinished business.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. All right, and this is something we is actually going to be up on the topics for monthly bit after we garner where the note in front might be going. Nobody has predicted where the storyline is actually going to end. And I was thinking for one of the monthly bit topics we could do for August would be to get a bunch of lore people together and have that discussion about
just
where it's going to go.
Conspiracy brainstorm, hey?
Yeah.
That would be fun.
Woo-hoo! Like, I imagine if we pull some people together, we could probably figure it out using logic and whatnot.
The little brain box.
Yep.
Yes.
The stream was...
Air pack is Q.
Oh, God. I thought that was Sliske.
Yeah, Sliske is Q.
Wait, are you talking about Q from Star Trek or QAnon?
QAnon, Shane.
Oh, okay.
I'm a little more topical than...
I thought you were talking about Q from Star Trek.
No.
Star Trek is topical. Star Trek is a topic.
It really is. It really is. It really is. In Desperate Measures, Charos tells us that the World Guardian effect is from Shadow Anima. Will that let Azanadra bypass the World Guardian status from being able to hurt us? There's a more complex answer to this because it's not that you get the power from Shadow Anima. It's a complicated mixture of Shadow Anima and the regular Anima woven together. There's no further answer going to be provided to this because underscoring the word may find out in future content. But we know the World Guardian power is effective against Shadow Anima because when we dealt with Raksha, the player is not killed. And Azanadra doesn't have too much Shadow Anima in him because he does not kill nearby humans, so he's by far less shadowy than Raksha is.
He's not a walking radioactive bomb.
Yeah, that's a good way of describing it, honestly. I already talked about the Anima constructs of Virago and Telos, but the short answer is that they're just too big to put in the City of Sintistan for this, and... chances are, by the time they knew what was happening, the threat would be done because they react so slowly.
I don't know. Telos doesn't seem to react slowly when I'm fighting him.
Very true. And since Shadow Anima is toxic to the Elder Gods, what would be stopping us from hiding the eggs in the Shadow Realm? Now, the distinction was made here, and I think we were questioning this when Zaros disappeared into the monolith, but we learned now that the Shadow Realm and Shadow Anima are not the same thing, and they're not exactly comparable, but they do have something to do with one another. There are human mages who can go into the Shadow Realm, but those mages, for example, also wouldn't survive into Raksha's if they went into Raksha's chamber. Then Mod Raven talked about what about doing other things that some players have suggested, like if I, and I quote, yeet the eggs into space. He said we have to assume the eggs have some protections, and that would make the Elder Gods right now very mad. And assuming the Shadow Realm had enough shadow to affect the eggs, it would hatch them before killing them, potentially making the outcome worse.
Woohoo! Yep, let's not try that.
Nope. Alright, so, before we move on to patch notes, give me three quick bullet points what you're looking forward to next week. Let's start with you, Questscaping.
So I'm personally looking forward to seeing how Karapak, as a lore character, exists as a PVM character. There's a lot of that in there. It's like, does he die for real? I think this is pretty much the first time we've had a very, very lore significant character as a boss fight, and in a story sense. Like, I think they were saying at the time of Rax release that this is our most lore-intensive boss ever. And, well, I think that's decidedly been one-upped because here's Kirapak, been in the lore since 2012, I think. And, yeah, this is a pretty significant event story-wise. And there's no avoiding that. And how is that going to go down? Is the potential cutscene going to play into that? What we saw glimpsed in the video of the Jazz going laser eyes on Orthon. I'm just wondering how that's going to turn out. I also want to see how this potentially ties in with Effigy Incubator.
That yes, could be- yes, because Effigy Incubator ends September 1st, right?
Yes. So that could be in the update itself. It could be in the end of Effigy Incubator. Because there's already been a bit of a tie-in with Kirapak. There was an update a few months ago in the Effigy Incubator where Vicenitas was saying that Kirapak had shown up just of Jazz's volition, as yep. everything he does these days is. And why was he there? Picking up something, wanting to see Vicenitas in himself? We gotta find out. We gotta see. And, yeah, I want to see what the node on stake in this really is. It's like, even in that one piece of promotional art they showed at the end of the more artsy trailer, the real trailer, they seem a lot more eager than you might expect. Yep.
And that goes back to that question that was asked on the stage Q&A. Why the Nodon instead of just the Dragonkin?
Mm-hmm. I want to see what their deal is.
Yeah, that's very, very true. And, you know, we also saw the needle in there and exactly what the heck is going on. And, you know, I think my biggest thing is that this is a boss fight that iterates nicely on what we've seen of the stepping up from the Matriarchs to God Wars 1, to God Wars 2, and then this. That's number one. Number two is that I don't want RuneScape to become that game where things are teased and then everything that comes out is, you know, in a way just so grand that it's kind of not believable how we kind of get, for anybody who's watched as an example, in modern Star Trek. And for number three, I hope that what happens in this front is going to be used as a learning experience for the next three fronts. So that's my top three. How about you, Tanis?
I think it's going to be listening to David tell me all about it.
Hey.
Hearing Shane talk about, like, I did it and be all excited. No, I'm honestly looking forward to the story. I think the whole Kirapak angle is interesting, but I mean, at this point, I think it's going to be treated as kind of a sock puppet, right? Like, it doesn't really matter what happens.
Well, he is under control of Jazz, right?
Well, exactly. So how attached are you? Like, he's just an extension of her, right? So, I don't think it draws the heartstrings in quite the same way.
All right.
But yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to, is just answering some of these questions. And then, well, I guess that would be for the next time. But I want to see, now that we know Dragonkin, if Dragonkin, which you would think was the, like, her special forces, her the strongest asset, what possibly could be after that? Now,
right?
Oh, yeah. And well, these aren't quite as powerful as the other Dragonkin. They've been taken right from the beginning before they got all their Stone of Jazz upgrades from hanging around with people using the stone too long.
And plus, the we're not going to be dealing with Jazz on the other ones. This is the Jazz front. The other ones are, of course, going to be full Wen and Bic. So logically, by extension of that, one of them, perhaps the Tsar? I don't know.
Most likely.
That's a scary thought.
The Tokar, yeah. Jazz 2.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, moving on, Prime Gaming this week. If you're Amazon Prime member, you can pick up a whole new boatload of goodies, as well as a number of DLCs are now available on Steam that you can pick up, because it has been 8 months since Steam launched, and you can pick up the Tea Time DLC packs, which include the Bistromancer outfit and a fancy clockwork penguin pet named Brewster. One of these packs also includes 12 months of membership, 100 bank spaces, 75 treasure hunter keys, and the RuneScape orchestral collection as well. But this month's Prime Gaming gives a 7-day of RuneScape membership and Clink the Crab Pet plus an Umbral Chest. You have until August 24th to pick that up. And Steam is also, or RuneScape is now also available on the Mac Steam client. People tend to forget that there's a Mac version of Steam. Personally, I don't use Steam on my Mac, and I'm quite happy with the level of stability that we have on RuneScape right now. So I'm just going to be keeping the way I am going on that. But I thought, you know, and when I looked at this, I just assumed it was going to be cross-platform initially. But this is actually an important benchmark for us on the Mac side, because to have something on Steam, you need to have a certain level of stability associated with it. So that's a good sign for all of us on the Mac. I remember last year, I was joking that, you know, RuneScape Mobile runs more performant on my iPhone 8 than it did on my iMac, but we've made some great improvements over the last year. Alrighty, we're going to move on to patch notes, but before we do that, I'll just thank some Patreon supporters this week. I'd like to thank Andrew C., Arvids L., Brock H., CGB900, Christian S., Chunk the Monk, Cook Me Plonks, Danny C., Diana, Drama Free, Dream Delayed, Duramax, Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Keski, Lucky Ducky, Nate the Great, Nora, Pernasius, Rastafa, Renhawk, Ricky A., Samuel F.L., Scott D.S., Soupfinder, Stabive, The Bears OP, The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V., and Zant. Thank you all of you for your support. It truly means the world to us, and I was already kind of saying what some of our monthly bid ideas might be. That's going to go up on a poll this weekend, but for as little as $1 a month, you can gain access to the entire back catalog of monthly bits, and that includes very fun ones such as our episode from last month covering the story of RuneScape Mobile. We've talked about Old School. We've talked about pretty much everything you can imagine under the sun. So if you just want to hear some deep introspective thoughts about it, you can gain access to that entire back catalog for as little as $1 a month. We also have the VIP tier, where you can gain a special rank on our Discord, and I mentioned on the podcast at the start of the month, in addition to everything else. And of course, for $5 a month, you'll receive a shout out each and every week on the podcast and exclusive access to the outtakes that we use to build the clip show. And rumor has it that there might be one of those this week from pre-show. As I mentioned, I'm not at my best this week, so I'm attributing it all to that. And we do our monthly round table. This month's will be happening on July 31st, which is part of Combat Week, so you get to watch me take on the Note on Front, maybe some other bosses as well. We'll see. We'll see. I've been starting to be a little bit more adventurous in this day and age.
There you go.
We're also working up to a Patreon mail out. When we reach $200 a month, everybody will get a nice, fancy, schmancy postcard. And, of course, should we ever reach that $500 a month target, Tanis and I will take the Hot Ones Challenge.
Yeah, wherever. Speaking of adventurous.
Yeah, I don't think you get adventurous until you get to that stage.
That will be quite adventurous.
Yeah. And, you know, I've often heard, was it you that said, or was it Pernasius that said, sometimes it's worse the day after?
I think that was Pernasius.
Yeah. So, if you're looking forward to all that, check us out at patreon.com/rsbnb. Thanks so much, everyone. All right, so for patch notes, we have a good selection of patch notes here. Starting off with Avondale, reduce the sensitivity of rotating the mobile camera. This is an experimental feature, and we'd love to hear any feedback on it. It honestly feels a little bit more native to the operating system in terms of having a bit of acceleration and give to it, I felt.
Hmm. Like more organic, hey?
Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, when you swipe something on a phone, it has that inertia to it. I feel like that's what we got nowadays, or now with this updated camera.
Okay.
So. On Dave and Dale added an extra movement marker between Dave and Dale's beach and the forest to help new players find their way, as well as tapping out of the dialogue cutscenes will now skip to the end rather than restarting the cutscene. And players will now be reminded to how to advance to the next page of dialogue when speaking to an NPC for the first time and during Dave and Dale's first cutscene. Also, the minimum and maximum camera zoom values have been adjusted to prevent players from getting their camera stuck in unwanted angles.
Oof.
I wonder what that was about. It seems weird. Alan, and here's the funny one. Villagers will no longer cheer during character creation if the David Dale tutorial was skipped. We don't want you anyways. We don't want you anyways. Get out of here.
That's great.
I'm guessing that was supposed to be they cheer when the tutorial is complete, because I think I remember seeing that. But if you skip the tutorial, that would just send completely the wrong message.
That's some kind of a first impression.
General mobile improvements now adjusted the brightness of bloom effects inside Warforge and increased the area in which users can tap to send a message on the small chat layout.
Thank goodness for that.
Yes. 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 But there's more with this. The quest list will no longer over-truncate the longer quest names on mobile. Semi-tapping on the newly opened menu interfaces will no longer close them, and users' names and titles will display correctly on the home menu. And the patch note of the week, in my view. It is now possible to save different font sizes for the chat window on PC and mobile.
Yes. Nice. You know, I was actually complaining about this on Reddit, which is not something I do very often, so... But yeah, it's... I couldn't see the font size very well on mobile, so changed from 11-point to 17-point, and there we go. Blown up nicely for my eyes. I logged to desktop the day after, and it was blown to the high heavens, and good God, yeah. I do not like this at all. So yeah, now I get to have the best of both worlds, and thank goodness for that.
Yeah, and you know, you definitely want to do this, because most people don't have these huge phablet-type phones. Most people have something more moderately sized. So this needed to happen. Tanis, do you change font sizes in game, or is it something that you don't pay attention to?
No. The increased scaling does pretty much what I need when it comes to that.
All right. Now going back 6 years, Raids was 2015, I think, when the grouping system came out. The group invitation window now has an X button to close it.
They did it!
Woo! We're on a roll.
I know. When this grouping system came out, it was absolutely horrid. They've improved it since, but this is one thing that still did not exist. The invitation did not have a little X on it. There was no way to make it go away and mind its own business.
Well, you can finally tell people to get out.
Yeah. Now, this is a bit of a weird one. Graphically updated the Saren Crystal, Dark Crystal, and Ireworth Elite Warrior cosmetic outfits.
Huh. Graphically updated how?
I don't know.
They've just been released.
Right, and you know, when I tried them on after completing the act track, they looked fine, so maybe it was some little edge issue that I wasn't experiencing.
Obscure glitch.
You will now receive a warning message when attempting to use a Dwarven tool in resource mode on a divine location while the shared knowledge buff is active. Boy, that's a mouthful, isn't it? previously, the buffs would wipe each other out and players would lose both benefits while the tool would still consume charges.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
This is where we're at. Dwarven tool, divine location, shared knowledge buff. Three levels of skilling going on at once.
And you gotta wonder who found that, because I guess it's not too hard, because the shared knowledge buff isn't that rare, right?
No, not really.
Yeah. No. I guess it's just right for me. Other fixes. Attacking a Raxor within a few seconds of its spawning will no longer cause it to immediately use a special attack followed by another.
Yes. Been seeing people just absolutely die insta-deaths at Rax. Just helpless the moment they turn up.
Yeah. Graphical fixes also to the Kadarn and Heffen Ranger outfits, also in that Yak Track category. And special attack energy will no longer be decreased by 5% when leaving combat while in legendary or legacy combat mode. That's a weird one.
Hmm.
Though, you can see why it's a problem, because legacy combat mode, you're supposed to start with 100% special attack energy, and then it just fires off when you use it. The Gnome Ball Refugee... referee...
Oh boy, from the Gnome Ball roars. I finally escaped the Gnome Ball pitch. Please take me in. Look after me.
The Gnome Ball referee has had a stern talking to about stealing players' personal Gnome Balls and will now correctly return them after they leave the pitch. That's just absolutely hilarious that something like that could be happening. I'm just wondering where I got refugee from.
I love the phrase sometimes.
The set effect for Linz of the Disgraced equipment will now trigger correctly. And we have a couple of fixes to the Cease ability, which were needed after last week. The Cease ability will no longer cause players to forget their main target, which was causing unintended effects. And the Cease ability buff is now correctly removed after attacking again.
Woo.
And when you look at those ones...
There's a world of untold stuff behind those.
There's a world of untold stuff behind those. And without these changes, that ability was pretty much useless if these things happen. So... All right, I believe that's it for the patch notes, except for using quick chat phrases in clan chat will no longer cause crashes. But overall, I think it was a fairly acceptable patch week, Gnome Ball refugees aside. So, there we have it, folks. All right, let us move on. We do have a few questions this week. First one is from Ben L. What do you think of RuneScape moving to monthly updates instead of weekly updates? I feel like this would take pressure off them to produce each and every week. Instead, they could give us a huge chunk of content dropped at the beginning of each month that could include quests, skill refreshes, bosses, etc. Then live events could happen through the month.
I've been in favor of this since forever.
Yeah, and you know, I honestly think we're already here.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Just by any other name.
What we get now.
Except it's not it's not necessarily at the start of the month. It's at some other point in the month, and that it kind of makes the gaps feel bigger, I think, sometimes. Because when you look go ahead.
They just kind of got to own up to it and say, okay, it's monthly. We'll finally roll with that. Feels like the weekly tradition has been the thing for as long as the game has gone, but this is really the cadence they've settled into, and
yeah.
Really just
you also
have
said the bad word.
Oh.
Remember for the longest time around Anachronia release that cadence was a trigger word? But yeah, I honestly feel like we're already here. It's just a question of when the update comes out, because you know, you have one or two ninja strikes a month, and when you're not doing a headlining week, you either have a time-limited event like the beach or a Yak Track, for example, or a holiday event. And then in the intertwining weeks when there's none of that, there's no ninja strike and there's no headliner, you have patch notes to fix little bugs here and there. Now, whether or not you call that weekly content, I think that's up for discussion. And Tanis, you and I have talked a lot about framing this as, you know, just... let's just accept the fact we're doing month-to-month now. Mm-hmm. But I think there's people inside the player base that need their week-to-week updates. And you can absolutely frame patch notes Ninja Strikes and time-limited events as updates, I think. It's just a question of how the players feel about that.
Well, it's what we've been doing for...
Yeah.
I mean, they've been doing that for about 6 months now.
Yeah.
And do we need weekly updates, or do we need the facade of weekly updates?
Yeah. And I don't know. It's a hard question, because there are some weeks where we don't have much to talk about here, but we pull it all together. But when the content does hit, it is outstanding and full to the bone of it. I'm talking about mobile. I'm talking about City of Centistan. And in the intertwining weeks, we have time to go back on those and look at them instead. And, you know, I'm not sure what I prefer personally. I kind of like it the way we're doing it right now.
Yeah. There's enough of worth.
Well, it took a long time to get here. We've seen him dance around and try a lot of different experiments. This seems to be working the best so far. So,
and we partially have COVID to blame.
Yeah, that's a thing.
Because you remember, after archaeology, people wanted bigger content updates, and it was just made an assertion by Mod Warden in a live stream that he can't produce that level of content. So instead, what you get is monthly headliners.
Mm-hmm.
So, I honestly think we're already there, Ben. Let us know if what you have written here in this question and how we've answered it has changed your mind, or if you still think we need to move to a more, you know, here's one update of the month, and then you can have everything else in between, if that's the angle you were going at. But I honestly don't think the player base would accept that. So, thank you. Next question is from Alaska. If you had the chance to hear dialogue from the Noden on the battlefield, however unlikely this might be, what would you like to hear them speak about?
Now, this question, I think back to, you got the Elite Dungeons. You can just go along and see them having a chat, generally interrupted by you killing them, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. It's quite nice to just see the day-to-day, the conversations that get had. And, well, it's quite an interesting situation for Nodon in particular, since they have essentially just woken up after several millennia. And, yeah, it's quite a new world for them. Maybe there's a bit of shock, a bit of awe going on. It's like, what is this new world? Well, maybe they're just the same old, same old. We've got an enemy to fight. Let's go fight it.
I'd like to hear them
approach.
Talk about the curse.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't know if I'm using the right word there. How they feel in regards to the other creeds of Dragonkin, because I know the other creeds were upset that they, in effect, just went to sleep. Mm-hmm. So maybe there's some kind of friction there that could be expanded on in terms of that, plus the curse.
Yeah.
That's what I'd like to hear.
Yeah, in general, the Nodon are one we know very little about. So,
and this be a good opportunity for that.
Mm-hmm. Bit of battle chatter.
Yeah. Tanis?
No, I don't really have anything on that.
All right, fair enough. And, you know, I think if I was just to expand on what I said, I feel like there's this whole mystery of aura still about the Dragonkin, and, you know, we learned a lot with the Orthon dig site, but, you know, we could always learn more.
Yeah, I'm down for that.
So, and number two, with a pure lore focus on this, what should Karapak drop upon defeat besides Staff of Armadil pieces?
A bag full of failed Visenothas clones.
Ooh! Ooh, that's harsh, given what some of the lore in Effigy Incubator has said. I forget. I think it was 2 or 3 months ago. There was a really harsh one. I actually had to bring it to the show. I forget what the exact tone of it was, but it was talking about failures and in effect how he was destroying his child, I believe.
Yep, just put every last descendant of us into the lava. Try again next time.
Yeah, you know, there's always a question, I think, when we talk about dropping lore pieces, because I assume this is the kind of question that everybody in Clan Quest and whatnot would like to see from Karapak. But if you put too much lore in a boss fight like this, it becomes a cape requirement. And that's something you don't necessarily want to do, because I'm looking at Nax in particular, how you have to fight that for a lore book drop.
Mm-hmm. You don't want one of the biggest things in the game suddenly also become your lore requirement.
Right, and it seems as though that they've kind of shifted away from that.
Mm-hmm.
So, as much as I would like lore, I don't think it's going to be possible. If anything, maybe have there be little fragments of paper dropped that can come from the Slayer creatures and just call them, you know, ramblings of the Dragonkin or something like that. And then you could, you know, maybe put a dozen or so of those together. You'd get, get one per Slayer task on average.
Something like that with the Magister, where you don't actually have to kill the Magister himself for his journals.
Exactly. And you initially did need to kill the Magister for that, but it was patched in later that you could just kill the corrupted creatures in the Sophodom dungeon.
Hey.
So there's no reason that can't be done here. Thank you for the questions, Alaska and Ben. If you guys want to send your own questions in, you can email us questions@rsbnb.com. You can leave us a DM on Twitter or reply to us when we put a ask out for those questions. And, you know, benefit of doing that, everybody's got to keep their questions under 280 characters. So it forces everybody to be concise on that. We also do have a question form that you can find at update.rsbnb.com/ask. Just fill that in. Provide what you'd like us to call you, your question, and a way to get back to you if you'd like us to discuss your question with you. But let's move on to Pick of the Week. And apparently, Tanis, Sirion, and I last week struck a nerve with the Steam Deck.
Well, you missed it, man. I feel like you didn't give it its proper due. You're looking at this from the eyes of someone that can see. And let me show you from the eyes of someone that doesn't see quite as good. The Steam Deck, man.
You're all over this.
It's gonna be... Yes, I am all over this. Look, I really liked the Switch when it came out, right? It was a fun, nice little handheld. I like how you can just pop it in the dock, plug in the HDMI. It was really nice. And remember that when the Switch came out, one of the criticisms of it was people said, oh, man, 720. Come on, man. Like, everything's 1080. Like, at least, come on. But it didn't matter. Because when it was such a good little console that, you know, even now, they still haven't improved the resolution or anything. I mean, we've got some new OLED screens, but nothing, you know, in the way of that. Whereas when I read this article for the Steam Deck, I'm like, holy cow. The last thing I saw was the resolution. I couldn't believe that it had a 4-core dual thread processor in it. That was like, seriously? I mean, it's comparable to what I have in my desktop. And then 16 gigs of RAM. I'm like, this thing is... You know, it's pretty powerful. And for me, being the, 1240 resolution?
1280 by 800.
Yeah, 1280 by 800. I don't see a lot of the small details like that. So,
and just to be clear to anybody listening, Tanis is legally blind. So you play games differently than the rest of us.
I do, but like, you know, take, you know, RS Mobile, for example. I play that a lot on an iPad because it does have some advantages to have having it contained like that. Plus, one of the things I can do is I can plug straight in HDMI with glasses I wear.
Right. And this does have HDMI out.
Yeah. This thing, it's got a lot. And here's the other thing. Like,
with the dock, mind you.
Right. But you can, you don't even have to use, I think
it runs Windows. It can run Windows.
I was going to say, yeah. You don't have to use what comes with it. You can install Windows. Guess what happens with Windows? Now you get to play Game Pass. So you can put you could have access to two of your biggest game libraries that you have. That's the other thing that was the selling point for me was, you mean I now have access to the hundreds of games that I have bought from one sale or another. You know, my Steam library by far is the biggest game library I have. It doesn't take up any room. I don't have to have a shelf with 50,000, you know, games and stuff. Like, very nice. And I can access it anywhere with the Steam Deck. So I hope it turns out to be as good as what, you know, what the ad is
saying.
It's going
to be interesting to see how the touchpad works for games that don't have controller support. And yes, I am looking at you, RuneScape.
Yeah. I wonder in those cases whether if there's a mobile version, if you're just better off to download the mobile app, because if you're running Windows, probably could do that, right?
RuneScape Mobile is only on Android and iOS.
Oh, Android and iOS. Oh.
Yeah.
Well, it's Android to begin with.
It's Linux.
Linux. There you go.
Yeah.
Linux. Okay. But yeah, lots of reasons why I'm very optimistic about this. You know, had it came a couple years earlier, this would have been a major competitor to the Switch. But even now, I think it is a very thoughtful alternative. This is a handheld for PC gamers, and there's just really, I can't think of other ways that you've been able to ever interact with your Steam library.
Which one are you going to get? You're going to get the base 64 gig where you need to use an SD card?
Oh, yeah.
You're going to get the 256 gig or the 512?
That's the only thing I don't like about this. I don't like the way that they're tiering it.
Right,
like
you can't add an SSD after the fact.
Yeah.
You can only use the SD card.
Yeah, but the SD card, I don't really have a problem. They're small. They're cheap. I think that's the route I would go. You know, I think that's the route that I'm gonna go. Just because 350 is a lot more reasonable than the 500 and some price.
Yeah, and you know, we struck
quite
struck
ready to commit to that.
great deal of controversy in this this week with that, and you know, we were doing the production for the show, and I said pick of the week, and you said you didn't, but you were really over the Steam Deck. I said okay, so you did that, and you weren't on the show last week. And for the longest time, people might not be aware, Tanis wrote gaming articles for Informer, and you covered a lot of things there. You've done lots of retro gaming. You've done sales of that kind of gaming hardware. So this is something that is your wheelhouse, and you didn't have a chance to talk about it last week. So I thought we'd just come back to it because it's good to have both sides of the story on this. So.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I can remember, I remember going back before the Switch came out, and writing about it and being very hopeful and completely surprised, at how well that it really did turn out. Now, of course, you know, Nintendo has...
You locked to Nintendo on that.
You know, their ecosystem has a lot of IP, you know, with it. But yeah. I think it's the access to the library that is the one of the big selling points to me for this device. It's not going to be as appealing to people that aren't PC gamers, right?
Right.
But for us, we are finally getting access to games that we probably would love to have played on the couch, you know, 10 years ago. That's the other thing you got to think when it comes to, like, yes, Microsoft is doing a pretty good job of backwards compatibility now, but the ultimate backwards compatibility is PC, right? We can play stuff from the 90s all the way to 2021, right? And I have games like that in my Steam library from that whole period. Now you're going to be able to play that on a handheld?
Yeah, and you know, one thing the people in the comments brought up was emulators.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll probably be a crazy emulating machine. I'm trying to think if it would be, if Retro, I think RetroArch would definitely, you could probably definitely put that on there. I know there's a Windows version.
Well, there you go. You could do that.
Yeah, and
or even if there's a Linux version, you could do that too. So
yeah, and that has like every emulator you could ever need on it built in.
Alrighty. Steam Deck version 2, or rather, discussion 2 on it. Thank you, Tannis.
Thanks, Shane.
Mine now is a Twitter account called Epic Maps, and, you know,
ooh,
there's lots of garbage on Twitter. We need to be 100% honest with that. And you can go on there and you can see what people are talking about, and most of the time it's nothing good. The trending section on Twitter is absolute garbage, and it's a platform that has shifted in recent years from one where you could find interesting things on it to one now where you really have to curate your own experience by following accounts. But this account is called Epic Maps. You can find them at locations, except the O is a zero in that, and some of the recent maps they've put out is the Roman Empire at its territorial height in 117 AD, a topographic map of the U.S., another topographic map of India, as well as a map showing the all-time temperature records in Europe, because everybody has been talking about what kind of temperatures we've been dealing with recently. Another one, tracking an eagle over the span of 20 years. It flew all the way from Sudan up into Kazakhstan, believe it or not, through Saudi Arabia, Iran, Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan, Azerbaijan, and so on and so forth. And, you know, if you enjoy seeing maps of any type, this is a Twitter account for you to look at. There's lots of fun ones that just show how a country looks, and you can see why, for example, Egypt is so successful in terms of its trade and why people are concentrated where they are in the country compared to where they would not be if the land was hilly and whatnot. And this sort of thing pops up all throughout this Twitter account as well. Another fun one in the U.S., red and orange areas in the U.S. have areas of equal population, showing the coast versus everything in between, for example. Worldwide air traffic. The language situation in Belgium, what people primarily speak in all the sections of that country, and so on and so forth. There are just so many unique maps here that you can find. So I wanted to highlight this because, you know, it seems as though that more and more everything that you find on Twitter is absolute garbage. And this is a fun way of, you know, just kind of taking a break from that when you're on that platform. So it's at locations with a zero. And that's my pick of the week.
Sounds really rather fascinating.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them at Can We Show, eh?
Yeah. Mythical Beasts of the U.S. is another one. Tanix, your area around Indiana and Ohio is the Mud Mermaid.
The Mud Mermaid?
Yeah.
I've never heard of a Mud Mermaid.
Yeah.
That sounds like someone just went in the mud.
Yeah. We have had a mountain lion has been spotted a few times, but never a mud mermaid.
I've always found that fun. So check that out. Let's move on to achievements. Start us off.
So, achievements of the week. We have Brisky 17 with 99 ranged on July the 21st. Also on that day, we have Hound Ears with 99 prayer, Ubi Danubi with 99 archaeology, and Spy Woman with 99 invention. Congratulations! July 20th was Drizzen with 120 slayer, Derpanyu with 120 thieving, and that was on July 19th. Also on that day is Drizzen again, 120 strength. Going all out on those 120s.
Nicely done.
Very nice. And then moving on. On July 18th, we have Zero Aces with 120 Slayer and 120 Farming. Very nice. Then we have Delinda Est with 120 Attack on July 17th. Delinda Est with 120 Constitution on the 17th. And Juju Simpei with 99 Smithing on the 17th. And Predius with 99 Invention on the 17th.
Well done. And then wrapping it all up, we have Drizzen with 120 Archaeology on the 16th, Mass Quest Points with 120 Invention, and Nordic Falcon with 99 Archaeology. Then on the 15th, we have Freak Keski with 99 Dungeoneering, Prideus with 99 Attack, and Zazakon with 120 Archaeology. Well done, everyone. And we're going to wrap the show up with that, but before we do that, I'll just ask what everyone's been up to on RS or otherwise. Questcaping, let's start with you.
So, in Clan Quest, we've had a bit of a thing going. We've been doing a whole lot of rots. Rise of the Six, love that boss. And we've been doing it with a specific goal in mind. So, we've got a group of people together, and we want to get all of us individually, Iron Man style, collecting all the energy required for a pet among us individually.
Ooh.
So that we can all get the pets together and do the little emote they do with all six of the different pets. That is the end goal here.
Oh, that's gonna make a fun photo art, Jeff.
Yes. So I've got mine. I went for Verac, and I got my tiny little Verac bobblehead pet following me around.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Homemade.
I really like that. That's a fun thing to do. How about you, Tanis, aside from heading home from Alabama?
Actually, I have been busy getting 120 archaeology. Just got that.
Woo!
A little bit ago.
months behind me, so it looks like Sirion's going to be bringing up the rear of that race.
Yeah, months behind, but it was, you know, a lot of fun, and I'm gonna miss it.
Did you get any spear tips?
I did get one. So,
oh, you did?
Yes,
nice.
And you were hoping you did, because
I was, yes, really hoping,
because that completely changes the equation of being able to make a tier 92 weapon with just a skill, right? In terms of what's available. When you'd have to spend hundreds of mil on that. So I am so glad that that was there.
Yeah. So excited about that. And yeah, I'll have to find my next AFK gathering skill to pair with my farming, because that will be the last legit 120 that I need.
Nice. Nice. You could take that spear when you're done and kill the matriarchs, at least the melee-based one.
Oh, yeah. I plan to do some bossing with it. I've held on to my my wishes so that I can get whatever perks I need.
Yeah. Okay. Speaking of that, I actually learned that I have not yet unlocked the Ilyushenkin components because I don't have a high enough reputation in God Wars 2. So I'd like to get that done at some point. Maybe that'll be a task for PVM week to unlock those components.
It's grind time.
Yeah. But aside from that, I got 116 Dungeoneering at the Dungeoneering hole last weekend.
Hey, gotta love that hole.
Yeah, we had a discussion about the ethics of it last week.
You had a whole lot of fun, eh?
Yeah. We really did. And, you know, yeah, go ahead.
I got a few of my Dungeoneering levels from that, but not all of them. Some of them from genuine Dungeoneering with clan members, and I enjoy that, but I don't always have time to do it. So for those other levels, in the hole it is.
Yeah. And see, this is the thing. You, of course, miss out on any lore drops that you'd get, but at this point, you can just go to the floors after that and pick them up in total over the span of last weekend, because, you know, on the weekend, there is no temperature limit at the beach, so you can just go nonstop. I got 3.9 million Dungeoneering XP last weekend.
Oof.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's what you need to do, yeah. Yeah.
But aside
don't worry about the ethics of the whole.
Yeah, yeah. But aside from that, I also have been working to complete the final breeding logs of Manor Farm. I just have the yak and the spiders left to do. They're all configured to provide shinies, so it's just a question of crossing the fingers and waiting right now for spiders and yaks. So that's what I've been up to. I am oddly looking forward to the Note in Front next week, believe it or not, which is weird to say as somebody who doesn't normally PVM on that. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens on Monday, but I think it's going to be a very, very interesting week. In terms
the power
of
including lore and everything, hey?
Yeah, that's precisely it. So, but of course, we'll be back next week. David will be on the show. We'll have the full rundown of the mechanics, the drops, what it means for the PVM meta. And, of course, for the future of the Elder God Wars dungeon and any lore ramifications that should come to it. But if you want to get notified of when that episode arrives, just subscribe to the podcast. You can find a list of places you can subscribe at update.rsbnb.com/subscribe. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google, Pocket Cast, Spotify, Stitcher, and YouTube, of course. YouTube is a good place. Subscribe there. And you'll be notified of when the video show goes out a little bit later than the MP3 show, but still on Saturday. And we also publish nibbles there. So give us a subscribe, give us a like if you enjoy the podcast. It helps ratings out. And with that being said, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Take care, everyone.
See ya.
Bye-bye.